Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, with military and economic schemes. My guess is there are few places on Earth that will do this same mission. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, we're going to explain why these things are happening and what it means for you and me. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which, my friends, means teaching and guidance, not law, and by way of His covenant, which is a personal family relationship. If you are rational, if you are interested in knowing if there is a God, and if there is one, how He can be known, unlike as we shall find in the Democratic Party, this will be the most revealing part of today's program. Our phone number, should you like to question, criticize, affirm, or just engage in conversation, is 877-300-7645. Well, the good news and the news segment of from SRN this morning was that Obama has finally resolved the jobless problem. You know, Barack Hussein Obama said, "You can call me former President Obama if I don't get America back to work and resolve the economy over the next 3 years." Well, congratulations, Mr. Obama. We can now call you current President Obama because you have resolved the jobless problem in America. Congratulations. Yes, indeed. We learned that the jobless rate went down because when a person loses hope and ceases to look for work, they're no longer considered unemployed. So that is the way that we decrease the unemployment numbers in America. We create such economic despair that people just give up. The perhaps the least credible source of, well, I can't say the least credible, but one of the least credible sources of news on the planet would be the CBN, which is the Christian Broadcasting Network. That's Pat Robertson's alleged news station, and it is the source of this next clip that we're going to both play and talk about relative to the Democratic convention. I've been on Pat Robertson's show a couple of times. Pat's, in my view, a complete phony. I think that Pat Robertson is amongst the most lost people on earth, complete and utter hypocrite. You know, he's the guy that thought that God had told him he was going to run for president. It's kind of funny that almost every Republican candidate this particular term, and Pat didn't run this time, he's getting pretty old, told him that, you know, God had told them to run. None of them seem to have lost their faith in the in their wannabe God when they didn't prevail. But nonetheless, Pat Robertson's CBN has brought us a story about the Democrat National Convention and the almighty nightmares, the headline in Charlotte, how Dems put God and Jerusalem language back into their platform, only to be booed. It reads, this story, "It has become a disaster for the Democrats and a boon to the Romney campaign. The DNC has now added God back to their platform language after originally taking it out. They have also added language back in that says that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel." Now, mind you, the Democrats have been involved negotiating the platform for probably better part of a year. And this platform has grown out of platforms that they've negotiated and debated for years upon years, decades upon decades. These are all tried and true principles of the Democratic Party that are etched into their platform. It's their constitution, if you will. Now, mind you, the platform of a party has no purpose whatsoever. There is no president that, if they're elected, our congressman or senator says, "You know, I'm going to look at the Democratic platform, and it says on chapter 3, page 2, section 5, that thou shall refer to God under these circumstances, but only in these circumstances. And that's completely ignored. The only purpose of the platform is it gives those who devote their lives to politics and just eat that stuff up alive, it gives them something to do. It gives them a way to feel important. But is it something that anybody references? No. It is a utterly wasted document. But anyway, after doing all of this and coming up with their platform, they were criticized because they had specifically removed prior references. It's one just completely innocuous reference to God, not to his name, mind you, just to the title. And they had taken out the reference to Jerusalem being the capital of Israel because, in fact, Obama despises that notion, and any time it's even brought up, Obama is on the side of the Muslims, wanting to give Jerusalem to the Muslims. So it was exposed by the Republicans that they made this change, and so it was by making the change that they got themselves in a vulnerable position. So now they were trying to unchange the change. Now, there are lots of times when you goof that the best thing to do is not to bring attention to your goof, but they couldn't help themselves. They're politicians after all. So when they tried to change the language on the convention floor back to what it had originally been, oh, there were boos. This CBN correspondent then says, oh, gewalt. Now, I think they were trying to be funny. Okavalt is a Yiddish term. It's kind of an interesting blend of Yiddish. Oi in Hebrew means woe, alas. Gewalt is actually not a Hebrew word. It's actually a German word. It means great violence. So woe, great violence would be the literal translation of it. But it's used in Yiddish to say, you know, woe is me, enough already, is kind of the what it's implied to mean. Well, despite the corrections by the Democrats, the Romney campaign can now argue that the Democrats don't know what they believe on two very important topics. Well, acknowledging Jerusalem as the capital of Israel in terms of American politics is not a very important topic. And having the title of God, which, you know, God uses that title to speak of both himself and of false gods, in a passing comment in your platform is also not a very important topic. Moreover, Romney hasn't got a clue who God is. And the God of the Mormons has more in common with Allah than he does with Yahweh. The changes just make the issue worse and the party look bad. That is true, is what the Christian Broadcasting Network has reported. In a way, it's unfortunate because this is their opinion now. This is an amazing opinion. In a way, it's unfortunate because the party speakers at the DNC have been talking about God. I will guarantee you that God's name has never been used. I'll guarantee you there hasn't been a single intelligent reference to his Torah. But anyway, they say they've been speaking about God, yes, the imaginary God of Christendom, the imaginary God of politics, from the stage, and there have been plenty of faith-filled events down here in Charlotte. Yes, faith-filled events, because politics and religion are bedfellows. So, Scott, I think you have this audio queued up. This is a audio that depicts the vote to change the platform of the Democratic Party.
The chair recognizes the delegate from Ohio, the chair of the platform drafting committee, former Governor Ted Strickland.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move that we suspend the rules to permit an amendment to the platform adopted by this convention last night.
Governor Strickland has made a motion on the floor to suspend the rules. Is there a second? A motion to suspend the rules to permit the amendment to the platform has been moved and seconded. This is a non-debatable motion requiring a two-thirds vote. All of those in favor of suspending the rules, say aye. All those opposed, say no. In the opinion of the chair, there's been a two-thirds affirmative vote to suspend the rules. Governor, would you like to make your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This summer, I was proud to serve this party as the platform drafting committee chair. As the chair, I come before you today to discuss two important matters related to our party's national platform. As an ordained United Methodist minister, I am here to attest and affirm that our faith and belief in God is central to the American story and informs the values we've expressed in our party's platform. In addition, President Obama recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and our party's platform should as well. Mr. Chairman, I have submitted my amendment in writing, and I believe it is being projected on the screen for the delegates to see. I move adoption of the amendment as submitted and shown to the delegates.
A motion has been made. Is there a second? Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, the matter requires a two-thirds vote in the affirmative. All those delegates in favor, say aye. All those delegates opposed, say no. In the opinion of the... Let me do that again. All of those delegates in favor, say aye. All those delegates opposed, say no.
Oh, it gets better.
I guess.
And then you've got to let them do what they're going to do.
I'll do that one more time. All those delegates in favor, say aye. All those delegates opposed, say no. In the opinion of the chair, two-thirds have voted in the affirmative. The motion is adopted, and the platform has been amended as shown on the screen. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Oh, that's precious. That is just so political. Yeah, first of all, we'll have to get to this story after the break as we run up to our commercial time, but it fit in beautifully with the time slot we had available. I will be glad to share some insights on that story when we return. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. You can also engage with us, 877-300-7645, but only if you're going to vote yay. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. That was an amazing clip, Scott. Thanks for playing it. For those who didn't hear that first segment, Democratic National Convention had a problem because they removed an innocuous reference to God from their platform, the only one that they had made, and they removed it, but more importantly, they removed a reference to Jerusalem being the capital of Israel. And if you want to know if Jerusalem's the capital of Israel, read the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. If you want to know what God thinks, since he was the other individual brought up here, read the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Jerusalem is a compound of two Hebrew words. Yara is the verb, and it's actually two verbs combined together, actually. Yara and Shalom. Yara is the basis of the Hebrew word Torah. Yara means the source from which instruction, teaching, guidance, and direction flow. Shalom, which most people think means peace, that's actually a derivative of its actual meaning. Shalom is reconciliation. And so when you reconcile a relationship, you have peace in that relationship. But the primary meaning of shalom is reconciliation. And so it is the source from which guidance, direction, teaching, and instruction on reconciliation flow. It is, according to Yahweh, the single most important place on earth. Jerusalem is the place where Abraham took Yishak, a Hebrew word that means laughter, his son, as a dress rehearsal for Passover. Every aspect of that story mirrors the Passover celebration. Jerusalem, Mount Moriah, Moriah means to revere Yah, is where Yahusha means Yahweh saves. I'm thinking maybe you're noticing a pattern here. That is where he observed Passover. He was Torah observant. He observed Passover as the Passover lamb. It was beneath Mount Moriah in Jerusalem that he observed matzah, reconciling our relationship with God by redeeming us. And then it was also on Mount Moriah in Jerusalem that his spirit and soul were reunited on Bukurim, first fruits. And then the celebration of Shavua, which means seven Sabbaths, the promise of seven, was fulfilled seven Sabbaths later when the set-apart spirit of Yahweh came to Jerusalem to enrich and to empower those who had accepted the terms and conditions of the covenant. Everything important happens in Jerusalem. When Yahweh returns, he will return on Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliation, on behalf of Yisrael and Yehudim, and he will do so in Jerusalem. When he camps out for 1,000 years celebrating the millennial Shabbat, beginning on the celebration of Sukkah, the seventh of Yah's seventh festival feasts, he will do so in Jerusalem. Matters not what man thinks is the capital of Israel. It only matters what God thinks. Israel is the promised land. It represents the opportunity to live with God. Jerusalem is the source of our reconciliation with God. Matters not what man thinks. It only matters what you realize that God thinks in this regard. What's interesting, of course, about that tape is that the first time that he asked for the vote, what you hear is that the yeas outnumber the nays by a tiny margin, but not by two-thirds. And that's why he pauses. That was not the answer that he wanted. So then he, in an almost condescending tone, tells them, wait a minute. Don't you understand what we're doing here? I'm not asking for your opinion. I don't really want you to vote. I want you just to agree to support what we've already decided to do. And he holds a second vote, and this time the nays are considerably louder than the yeas. Now the woman walks up and says, hey, you got to feed them, you know, whatever they want to go, whatever direction they're going to go, that's what you need to do. And he says, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm a politician, after all. What the people think, how they vote, is irrelevant to me. I was sent up here to do a job. I'm going to do the job I was told to do. He holds the third vote, and the third time, the vote is two-thirds nay, one-third yay. Yes, Scott.
Well, they know what we want.
Yes, they obviously know what's better for us.
Yes.
They do. That's the nature of government, is they exist to control people. They exist to oppress people. They exist to fleece people. And they do so by giving the sheeple, if you will, reasons to believe that they ought to trust and rely on them. And the more reliant and the more trusting that people become, the more they believe in their government, the easier they are to beguile, to oppress, and to fleece. And therein is the danger of politics and patriotism. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
September.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We in the break we're talking about democracy and representative government. And I want to get to that in a moment as to why what we witnessed at the Democratic National Convention is the bane of America now, that America views itself, unfortunately, as a democracy. But first, let's just talk about the, since I talked about Jerusalem, let's talk about the language that was reinstated from the 2008 party platform that was taken out by the committee that was now reinstated. This, it reads, we need a government that stands up for the hopes, values, and interests of working people. And before I read further, The whole idea of politics and patriotism is the government is the entity that stands up for the people as opposed to God. And the whole purpose of the Torah's teaching is that God lifts us up so that we can stand with him. But in politics, it's the government that stands up for the people. They don't stand up for themselves. They don't have, it's not God that helps them stand. No, it's the government that is the source of all good. So it begins, we need a government that stands up for the hopes. So it's the government that's the source of the good. It's the government that provides the values. It's the government who is working in the interest, and they say, of working people. Working people in the political world means communism. We're speaking of where it's the working people, the people who actually get their hands dirty, as opposed to those who build or manage businesses. They're the foe. The working people are the good. Now, this is further clarified and gives everyone willing to work hard. The reason they use work hard here, just to help you understand their mindset, is that they don't view the entrepreneur that works 80 hours a week, risking his capital, great personal anguish that's involved in building a business, and all the risk associated therein, and all the struggles therein, they don't view that as working hard. What they view as working hard, again, is someone who turns a wrench, someone who connects wires, someone who does more manual labor, and that's why they use the term work hard, the chance to make the most of their God-given potential. Yes, Scott.
I was going to say that I've had manager jobs and everything, and those have been like my hardest jobs that I've ever had because it's mentally taxing, and not only are you having to worry about everything that goes on, but you got your employees that they all have their own personal issues that you. At the end, that if it affects work, you're the one that is responsible to try and take care of those things so they don't affect work. You know, I need this day off. I need that day off. Calling in sick. So all those things, you have to then step in and fill that role. The mental taxation in a manager job is just unbelievable, and you don't understand it until you're there.
Yeah, let me take that up one step. I would never trust anyone to manage any economic activity until they have first had to make payroll. Until you are in a position in business where every employee is dependent upon you raising the money and making the money available to make payroll, and you have done it month after month, year after year, in good times and bad, until you have learned that, you ought not engage in any political activity that has any sway over the economy. That's the ultimate crucible in terms of a person's ability to understand economic issues, is building a business and being responsible for payroll. None of these Democrats have had that experience. Now, there is a now that we know that this is what they said, and one last comment here is that God does not give individuals more or less potential over any other individual. There's no such thing. God only gives us three things. He gives us mortal life, which is life that extinguishes at a certain period of time, but it is mortal life. He gives us free will, the ability to make decisions as to whether or not we will accept him, come to know him, reject him. He gives us free will. Number three, he gave us a nesama, a conscience, so that we could exercise good judgment. Now, as you see here in this particular political situation, the people voted and their votes weren't counted. Now, the people were in favor of making the wrong decision, excluding Jerusalem, denying Jerusalem as being the capital of Israel, and even denying a reference to the title God. The people, by two-thirds, wanted the wrong thing. The founding fathers of this country recognized that democracy would be the destruction of the country. America is not a democracy. In a democracy, the people choose for themselves all aspects of their governance. That is not what happens in a republic. A republic is the rule of law. In a republic, you begin with a constitution, which is the basis of the country, And then the people elect individuals whose job it is to make decisions based upon that document. They have no authority beyond the document. And it is their job to shed their ignorance during that period of time and to make moral, just, enlightened decisions based upon that document. Now, the reason they were opposed to democracy is that Jefferson in particular was a student of history. He knew that there'd only been two democracies prior to, two democracies, period, in the human history. One of those democracies was the Delian League. The Delian League, which was authored by Athens, the city-state of Athens, was created expressly to create a means of creating a buffer between them and the Persians. They wanted the coast of what is today Turkey, part of Persia at the time, and fought over also by Greece, and the islands that were between Greece, the peninsula of Greece, and Persia, Turkey today, to serve as a sort of a buffer between them and the Persians. And so they imposed democracy on them. They said, you will, by force, accept our political values. Well, when you impose choice, you have no choice, and, of course, it failed. So the Delian League was an expression of democracy that existed for a military purpose, and it failed because choice was imposed. Contradictory terms. It was purely hypocritical. So the only long-living democracy in human history is Sparta. There probably is no better example of a bad civilization, evil, ruthless, despicable than Sparta. In Sparta, children were abused. Women were abused. The entire economy in Sparta was based upon slave labor. The Spartans did one thing. They trained their sons to fight. And they were really good at killing. Yes, they had the most powerful per capita military in the world, similar to the United States, really good at killing. But that's all they were good at. But Sparta was a democracy, the longest-lived democracy in human history. A horrible example. That's why the founding fathers were opposed to democracy. And that's why, because we in the West have changed our vocabulary so that we now think that democracy is the greater good, that we've had democracy now with the Arab Spring, and we've had democracy in Iraq, and we have democracy in Afghanistan. Look how much better the world is. No. When you have democracy, what you get is what we have in Egypt, where the majority of the people vote for the most religious of candidates, and that country becomes ever more ruthless and savage. What you see in democracy is what happened at this convention, where the people expressed their will. Now, in this particular case, the chair completely ignored the will of the people, because the Democratic Party really isn't about democracy. Every word of their platform, their whole essence is about communism and socialism and socialist secular humanism. But therein is the problem. We have changed the terminology, so we now think that bad is good. In fact, you could not be in a more upside-down position where America champions democracy, which is bad. It's a sad, sad day, that particular clip. Speaking of sad, there's a story that we covered a little over a week ago about a young lady named Rimshaw. She's 13 to 14 years old. She's mentally handicapped. She was in Pakistan, remember, and she was arrested and thrown in prison for allegedly desecrating the Quran, accused of burning the pages of the Quran that were in a little paper bag that she was carrying. And she was thrown into prison. Now, there was this feeling that maybe she was just arrested for her own safety and put into protective custody. No. She is in a maximum security prison. Now, what happened here a couple of days ago is it turns out the imam of the largest mosque in that community has been found guilty of setting her up. He's the one who burned the pages of the Quran and put it inside the little girl's bag, and then had the people look into her bag after he had done this and accuse her of blasphemy. the imam of the local mosque, set this little mentally handicapped child up. So just when you think it couldn't have gotten worse, it does. Yes, Scott?
Just remind me quick. The imam is the leader, the spiritual leader of the other
yes.
Muslim groups, correct?
Okay. Yes. An imam is like a priest in a Catholic church. An imam is like the pastor in a Protestant church. The imam is the leader of that community. They are the most schooled in Islam. The best Muslim in any community is going to be the imam. So this is the most devout Muslim in that community. He set up a 13 to 14-year-old mentally handicapped girl to die for a crime that he himself committed.
How did they find this out? Because, I mean, technically he committed the crime that she's accused of.
Yeah, because Muslims are stunningly boastful. Arrogant to a point of silliness is one of the things that you notice. Muhammad had it. Allahu Akbar is all about arrogance. Allah is greater. It is just part of their DNA, because the thing that got Satan, who is Allah, in so much trouble was ego. And the very thing that caused Muhammad to create Islam was his personal lust for sex, power, and money. Ego dominates Islam. And so this imam bragged about it.
And it's
bragged like, about it.
It's also apparent in their, when they commit their acts of terrorism and stuff, they're usually very quick to be like, hey, we did that. That was us.
Yeah.
Which made the story you told last week about the mother and daughter being beheaded or whatever.
Yes.
Where they were like, hey, it wasn't us. that was very odd.
Yeah, when we come back in the final segment of our news hour, we're going to talk specifically about what the blasphemy laws in Islam are all about. Because everyone is aghast that this little girl has been imprisoned, and they're not aghast over the blasphemy laws that exist in Islam. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths, I am your host, Yada. We were talking about the tragic case of this little girl who was set up by the most Islamic person in her town, the imam of the local mosque, who actually burned the pages of the Quran and set them into the girl's knapsack and then accused her. So she is sent into a high-security prison, and if she remains there, she will be killed. And so what I promised to do is to talk a little bit about the blasphemy laws that exist in Islam. Now, let's just put this in perspective. Muhammad was a pedophile. He was a rapist. He was incestuous. It means he had sex with his adopted son's wife. When he was 53, he had sex with a 9-year-old girl, multiple times and multiple girls. He has three very well-documented cases of himself being engaged in rape. He funded Islam based upon terrorism, the slave trade, kidnapping, and thievery. He is routinely shown lying and is routinely shown being sadistic. Okay, there's the example that the Quran tells Muslims to follow. That is the nature of Muhammad. Easily the most repulsive recognizable man to ever lived. He's a mass murderer. All right, Allah is modeled after Satan. Allah spends all of his time, according to the Quran, in hell torturing people. Allah fits the profile of Satan in every possible way. The Quran is the worst book ever written. It is a jumbled mess. It is plagiarized. It is bastardized. It is wrong historically. It has no prophetic statements in it that have come true. It is an absolute disgrace. It is the dumbest, most immoral, and vicious book ever written. All right, so got a pretty good picture of Islam, and everything that Islam has touched, it has destroyed. All you have to do is open your eyes and look at who's committing acts of terrorism, and look at the conditions, the hellish conditions that exist in every Islamic country. All right, got the perspective here now. Well, if you speak against Islam in any way, if you speak against Muhammad, if you say anything negative about Muhammad, And if you say anything or write anything or do anything that can be considered an insult to the Quran, the punishment in any country that is Islamic and guided by Sharia law is death. Now, the world is saying, how could you do this to this 12-year-old, 13, 14-year-old girl who is mentally handicapped? The world's not informed enough. It's not moral enough to say the problem here isn't the fact that this is a 13-year-old child that is mentally handicapped that's being victimized. The problem is Islam. A religion that says, if you insult our prophet, we're going to kill you. A religion that says, if you insult our scripture book, the Quran, we're going to kill you. If you say anything derogatory about our religion, we're going to kill you. Such is the nature of a religious culture that can't handle the truth. If you can't handle the truth, if you can't debate the message, if you can't defend your religion, what you do is you kill the messenger. Muhammad himself did this, and he's described as doing it three times in the inception of Islam. All three times, women were involved who had the courage and good nature to say, this guy is a fraud. You ought not believe him. It is so obvious that what he's saying is untrue, even demonic. It's despicable. And all three times, Muhammad told his mujahideen, his jihadists, to lie to deceive the women and then go in and kill them in their sleep, even with their children in the same bed. That's the nature of this despicable religion. Now, during the break, Scott said, you know, if you were rational, you looked at this case with this poor girl, and you'd say, okay, we've found that the imam set her up, and the poor girl, therefore, is innocent. You need to free her. And I said, Scott, would you do that? Recognizing if you do it, you're going to get a bullet to your head. The last politician and judge in Pakistan that made that decision was killed. And the last time a person who was accused of such a crime as blasphemy was turned over to the people, they were doused in gasoline and burned alive. Would you do that?
It'd be a really tough call. I don't think I could.
I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll return to Yah's Torah after the break.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my...